Okay, this is Mae Brussel. It's program number 600, June the 6th, 1983. World Watchers officially begins. Have that half hour for conversation before. And this is KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. This time last year, we were talking about the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. I was doing a two-part series on the Knights of Malta, a group that was formed by the Vatican 1,000 years ago, the military branch of the Vatican to defend the Roman Church. And I was giving names of members of the cabinet, of Ronald Reagan's cabinet, of the CIA, of the Defense Department, who are members of the Knights of Malta, who make the most important decisions for the government at the present time. The separation of church and state is getting almost impossible to define. There is very little separation in the Reagan administration because the top officials, William Clark, William Casey, the Buckleys, and Vernon Walters, all his advisors, a good hunk of them, J. Peter Grace, are knighted by the Vatican and have dual citizenship, postage stamp, flag, etc., to a place located next to the Vatican. And the question we will never know, where is their loyalty to their church or their country, or is their country to be protected by the military branch of the church to keep it one country under God? Now, in regards to the program last year, I mentioned a law firm, Saxe, S-A-X-E, Bacon, B-A-C-O-N, and Bolin. And I mentioned that Roy Cohn is a member of the law firm of Tom Bolin, who is a Knight of Malta. And last week, in 1983, just last week's program, or 2 weeks ago, I brought out the role of Roy Cohn with Western Goals, with the John Birch Society, and the secret files in the Los Angeles Police Department that go out to police departments in 50 states. This is a red-hot item that I will be doing a lot more on, but the problem here isn't necessarily Catholic or Jewish. Roy Cohn works with the Knights of Malta at both ends. He works in the law office representing this particular law office, and he also works with the Birch Society, who are violently anti-Semitic, and Mr. John Reese and Louise Reese and people like Mr. Oliver of the Birch Society, who recommend that all Jews in this country should be gassed, in other countries also. I also mentioned a year ago tonight that Roy Cohn was the partner of David Shine. Many of you remember that during the years of the Senator Joe McCarthy hearings and chasing commies all over the world and in the United States. David Shine owns the Ambassador Hotel. He always has for years and years. And that was where Robert Kennedy was murdered just 15 years ago tonight. First, Ethel and Robert had dinner with Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski. And many of you know that. Some of you don't know that. Then went on to the Ambassador Hotel, where a security guard, Thane Caesar, shot Robert Kennedy in the back of the head. He works in Riverside, and he was sent from Lockheed, which again is part of the Howard Hughes, Robert Mayhew organization. The assassination team sent a guard from Lockheed to kill Robert Kennedy. Sirhan Sirhan will be paroled. He's up for parole, and I understand it's about to come. It's been 15 years. He mentioned that he'd like to go back there. He can't remember what happened. He did shoot four people in the Ambassador Hotel. His bullets went into four different people, but they weren't the bullets that went in the back of the senator or the back of the head that were described by Thomas Noguchi in the autopsy. Cardinal Spellman was the military and spiritual center for the Knights of Malta in the United States, and I talked about him last week and his role in Vietnam. And I said Mr. Spellman was Cardinal Pacelli. He then became Pope Pius XII and had an instrumental role in working with Adolf Hitler and Mussolini. That was last year. This year, this last week, a new book came out, La Popessa, P-O-P-E-S-S-A, The Controversial Biography of the Most Powerful Woman in Vatican History. This is supposed to be a very good book by Paul Murphy, published by Warner Books. She is Pasalina, P-A-S-C-A-L-I-N-A. I'm just reading a section from a description of this book. The Bavarian-born nun who emerged from rural obscurity to become the confidant and the advisor to Pope Pius XII through his rise and reign. She was his partner from Munich Uprising in 1920s to the end of Pius's life. She was behind the scenes. She is the person who shared his thoughts, Eugenio Pacelli, P-A-C-E-L-L-I, who later becomes Pius XII. While he was dealing with Hitler, Mussolini, Churchill, and Roosevelt, she was part of all those meetings, and she is, I believe, aged now, an old woman, and has this book, A Controversial Biography of the Most Powerful Woman in Vatican History. One book review says that it describes everything but they're going to bed together, but even implies that. So La Popessa is about Pacelli, and last year I was talking about Pacelli and Cardinal Spellman and the Knights of Malta. Also, Mr. Grace, very important person that was with George de Morenschild, Oswald's contact, the Grace Company, and the Knights of Malta. I went into Mr. Nicholas Brady and Joseph Grace, and William Russell Grace described in the book The Nazis Go Underground with his connections in South America to forming the Nazi movement over again, Mr. William Russell Grace. The Los Angeles Police Department enters in this year to what I was talking about last year because Mr. J. Peter Grace worked with Robert Millikan on the board of his company, J. Peter Grace, and Citibank, and they funded Senator Strom Thurmond, remember? And on the sheet that goes with tape number 548, a year ago tonight, I said they were part of the Larry McDonald Georgia Foundation. Now, sometimes I talk very fast and I bring in so much we could, you know, spend 3 hours if I did it slower and let these names sink in. But I do have the printed sheets that accompany this broadcast, the bibliography. And if it goes too fast, send a self-addressed stamped envelope and tell me which broadcast it is that you want. Tonight is number 600, and I'll give you the names. Or a year ago tonight, that broadcast is available. That's 548. And I talked about Larry McDonald. So when it turned out that the Los Angeles Police Department files were connected to a $100,000 computer in the home of John Reese and his wife that goes to Larry McDonald, and that's Murder Incorporated from Atlanta, Georgia, and also Larry McDonald formed that Western Gold Foundation with Roy Cohn, who I began talking about just a few moments ago with the partner for the Knights of Malta. So in the John Birch Society, the H.L. Hunt was a Baptist. He also was a Mormon. He took on two religions so he could have a lot of wives. But Roy Cohn's name comes through here. The Senate hearings with Senator Joe McCarthy, the links of McCarthy to the Catholic group at Georgetown, the Knights of Malta, that were feeding him names through J. Edgar Hoover and Interpol so that he can conduct Red Scares in this country and frighten people and have them lose their jobs and have that Red Scare that was so terrible through those years in the United States. Some people still suffer from what happened at the time. So a year ago, I was talking about Roy Cohn and Joe McCarthy and Larry McDonald and the various partners of Shine and Cohn. And as I say, this is the anniversary of Robert Kennedy's assassination. And it was in the Ambassador Hotel owned by David Shine. And a lot of people said it couldn't possibly be a conspiracy because nobody knew what door Robert Kennedy was going to walk out of, which pantry. Well, if you own the floor plans, you own a hotel, you could have a Sirhan at every door, somebody equivalent to him, if you wanted to have a gunman and have a setup in the Ambassador Hotel, would be the easiest thing to do. Now, changing subjects, but not far off the subject, there was a large story in the San Francisco Examiner yesterday. Japan's World War II plan to set up a fifth column of immigrants. And this is plans a year before Pearl Harbor to send in people and use Japanese Americans or people that were anti-Semitic, similar to Hitler's ideas, blacks who didn't like this country. And Roosevelt and Secretary of War Henry Stimson understood this sabotage that was going on. Later, the excuse for rounding up the Japanese was that for a year they had been infiltrating this country and working as journalists in the United States. Now, this article that just came out is about newly released papers from the National Archives on the sabotage that was planned 1 year before Pearl Harbor, which would be 1940. And what I've said many, many weeks, and it can bear repeating over and over again, people like Peter Drucker, who formed the multinational corporations that make it possible for Henry Kissinger and Gerald Ford and others to just float all over the world with their meetings with these huge corporations that are bigger than nations. Peter Drucker, Henry Kissinger, and Fritz Kramer could be fifth column that came here in 1939, put into military intelligence, and then worked with the top Nazis as soon as the war was over, and during the war also, so that the sabotage that was going on, planting people in this country a year before, very easily coming from the east western division, say it's our west, the ocean, but it's the eastern, far east, the same thing was coming from Germany over here. Now remember that Douglas MacArthur, his chief of intelligence, was Colonel Willoughby. It's Kurt Weidenbach, a German who fought with Franco, a Nazi, set up American intelligence in the Pacific Ocean. So he could be sending journalists and so forth to undermine the United States, just as Mr. Peter Drucker took credit for bringing Fritz Kramer to this country, and Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger meet and then go on with the top Nazis of the world up to this day. So that the intent to set up the fifth column a year earlier in 1940 with Japanese and anti-Semites and news media is consistent with what I knew was going on the East Coast and with John McCloy working in Europe from 1930 and 1940, and then these people suddenly coming to this country and putting on American uniforms. I got a letter from Peter McAlpine. Some of you know him, some of you don't. He has a conspiracy digest. He doesn't print it anymore, but I want to tell you, he has reprints of his old articles, and they're very valuable, and I want to give you the address. Write to Alpine Enterprises, P.O. Box 766, Dearborn, Michigan, 48121. Now, he has a package for $30 for all of his past issues. Of course, the best one, I think, was in winter 77-78. It was an interview with Mae Brussel on the world in general, the assassination teams, and particularly Henry Kissinger, the Nazification of America with Henry Kissinger. But he has a newsletter that started in 1976 and went till 1979. And all of those together are only $30. So if you send that address or write to him and get his new digest, he has lists of books that are very hard to get. His books are terribly expensive, and I would try research with Tom Davis at Capitola to collect these books first, because they're very, very expensive, his books. But there's some that we can't get, and sometimes you have to pay him for those. Now, this is graduation week. There was a picture of John. He graduated. John Kennedy is all grown up now. Went out of Brown University with a history degree today. What do you think? So I just made a few notes of what John's got to learn. Now he's got to unlearn everything he learned at Brown and everything he learned at home. And for graduation present, I just thought, I'll give John my entire library, 3,000 books, everything on the assassinations, if he'll investigate his mother's role with Aristotle Onassis and John J. McCloy. You know, this kid graduating in history is the stuff that Shakespeare wrote about, and the Greek dramas, and the entanglement of being right in the midst of all his activity and thinking, I will study history. Where do you start if you're John Kennedy Jr.? One article I have from Jack Anderson, May 21st, 1975, the law office for Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, when she got her $20 to $26 million settlement from Aristotle Onassis's estate, goes through the office of John J. McCloy in New York City. Milbank, Tweed, Hadley, and McCloy. McCloy was on the Warren Commission that covered up who murdered her husband, but he handles her $26 million from Onassis. And Onassis was the place where she was the summer before she went to Dallas, when Kennedy said, get your butt home as fast as you can, and you're going in the motorcade with me, Tootsie. And when she got back to the White House, Onassis was the first person in the White House. And then she went on the yacht, got her $26 million, wrote a contract, and McCloy handled it. And also, that was a nice settlement, but she had to go through that. That's the way it went. Another article I have from American Opinion, the John Birch Society, on John J. McCloy, and it tells how the office of Chase Manhattan, and McCloy was on the board of Chase Manhattan, was the attorney for the Soviet Union after the Bolsheviks came in, handling the Nobel family's giant Caucasian oil fields, the Baku oil fields. The Chase Manhattan, the Rockefellers were working through the Chase Bank, and this is John McCloy with the Baku oil fields and the Nobel. Now, the very first person that contacted Lee Harvey Oswald in Dallas, in the Fort Worth area, was George de Morenschild. He knew Jackie Auchincloss, was at their home in Long Island when she was little. He was Lee Harvey Oswald's contact for the Defense Department. His father managed the Baku oil fields, the Nobel oil fields, before the Bolsheviks came over. He ran them for the Tsarists, and then the de Morenschild family fled. and went to Poland and to Belgium and then to the United States Defense Department. And when Marina Oswald's brought from Minsk, I always thought she was related either to George Bowie or George de Morenschild from Minsk. John J. McCloy and George de Morenschild and Jackie Onassis had a cute little circle of relationship. There's a matter of fact, when George de Morenschild was traveling in Mexico, he carried an ID from Chase Manhattan and Nelson Rockefeller for his money or the money he needed. This is before he attached himself as an agent to Lee Harvey Oswald. So maybe John should study Onassis, and maybe he should study that little subject. And then also when Jimmy Carter was having trouble in the Middle East, he calls in, according to the New York Times, this is September 30th, 1979, his special team, 15 high officials for advice, Henry Kissinger and William Rogers, both on the board of 20th Century Fox, now covering the drug market, the worldwide drug market, and the Defense Department, Clark Clifford, John McCloy, again, the advisor to Jimmy Carter, Brent Scowcroft, the protege of Fritz Kramer, the National Security Advisor to President Ford, and Nicholas Katzenbach, who was Undersecretary of State for Lyndon Johnson and who covered up the John Kennedy murder. And he was the first person to give orders to start bugging and following the people who were doing research to find out who killed John Kennedy. So Mama's lawyer is really tangled with some pretty heavy company, heavy duty. So now John has to unlearn what he learned if he's going to be a history major, or else he's going to fall into the same trap his father did, because they're not going to let them get too far, the Kennedy clan. And someday they got to get their smarts about him. Now, the Pope urged this week that U.S. senators set human rights examples for the world. This was the Associated Press from Vatican City, June the 5th. Six senators went to see the Pope. I'm only going to mention two of them in terms of research. One is Richard Lugar, Republican from Indiana, Orrin Hatch from Utah, you know that fella, and Arlen Specter from Pennsylvania, the Republican. Well, Lugar had a notorious scandal that surfaced and was hushed up at the time of Watergate. It was in the newspaper's 1976 bizarre scheme entwines a senator. He was supposed to have had a Swiss bank account, according to the Knight News Service. And some people said it was fake, but that the signature was forged, but it was never put to a court or put to a test. He had a bank account in Switzerland of $1,350,000 opened April 10th, 1972, 3 days after a campaign law that Richard Nixon's money and contributions would have to be declared. And this was done 3 days after, and he hadn't declared it. The signature of the money for the Republican Party via Mr. Lugar went from Horia Sima, H-O-R-I-A-S-I-M-A, a fugitive Nazi war criminal living in Spain since the end of World War II. There are many top Nazis that funded Richard Nixon's career straight through, but Senator Lugar had the bank account. The details opened April 10th, 1972, getting money from Spain from Horia Sima, Nazi war criminal, to put in the Republican coffers. And the Pope is saying, oh, Mr. Lugar, let's have some human rights. And the other person, Arlen Specter, was the man from the Warren Commission who invented the one bullet theory against the law of physics that covered up the mafia and the Nazi connections to the murder of John Kennedy. He defied all the laws of science and physics. Arlen Specter is a rat over there in the Vatican with Lugar, and the Pope is asking for human rights. And of course, you know, Orrin Hatch's position towards equal rights and abortions and so forth. I mean, very far, far right. But the other two men were involved in the intrigue of Nazis and the covering up Nazis and money from Nazis. And the Pope, true to his tradition, is telling them and entertaining them to speak of human rights. Now, I mentioned the Pope with his scandal with Herman Apps. This was about November, half a year ago. November tape 573, if you want to look up that broadcast, or if you don't have it, you can get it. And I mentioned that at the height of the scandal of Banco Ambrosiano, and Roberta Calvi, the president of the bank, was hung in London, and the scandal of the bank was opening up. They had $1.2 billion in dummy fronts in Panama, doorknobs. They still won't tell where it is. Paul Marcinkus, the head of the Vatican Bank, is still hiding in the Vatican. So in order to solve the problem, the Pope brought in Herman Apps to control the problem. And I never did have time to go into the details of Herman Apps with you, because as long as the Pope is talking about human rights, Let's get on with the Auschwitz Pope and human rights. It was the New York Times article, November 27th, 1982, that Mr. Apps, of high international standing of West Germany, is added to the panel of three to supervise the Vatican funds. Well, one article about Apps was put out by the Holocaust Center in Los Angeles, and this particular article has the case against Hermann Apps. A, Hermann Apps was the most important financial figure in the Third Reich. Without him, the banker industrialist, the Nazi economy couldn't have developed into the phenomenal thing it is. And they have the story of the Vatican Bank. Two, his influence was described as tremendous by Baron Kurt von Schroeder, S-C-H-R-O-E-D-E-R, chairman of the Gestapo's bank in Cologne, C-O-L-O-G-N-E. In 1941, IG Farben was the most powerful chemical industrial conglomerate in Nazi Germany, and Hermann Apps helped build the rubber plant in the infamous Auschwitz concentration camp, and that branch of Farben was called Solvay, where the Pope was working before he was a Pope or a priest, and then went on to Montini from Milan, the Milan Mafia in Rome, the Secretary of the Vatican at the time. They say that he was the bank's representative on every board. He was the chairman of many boards and industries and businesses in Germany throughout the entire war. The Deutsche Bank contributed to the Adolf Hitler Fund every year. The Friends of the Himmler Circle, at the discretion of Adolf Hitler and Heinrich Himmler, the Reichsführer of the SS. They handled the account of Goering, Ribbentrop, Rosenberg, the Nazi Party head office. This is Mr. Apps. Hermann Apps was on the advisory board of the Reichsbank, and at the Nuremberg trial testimony, he was accused of looting gold from the camps, including Auschwitz. He was sentenced to 6 years, but he got off thanks to John J. McCloy. He didn't have to serve all of that sentence. Now, I have references for you from different books that was sent from a world watcher in New York. Incidentally, there's a book, Fascism Today, and it tells the role of Hermann Apps building up the IG Farben through the Marshall Plan, the restructuring of Germany similar to Nazi Germany and the banks today. As soon as the war was over. The Brown Book, which is a study of Nazi war criminals, page 39 and 49, has the story of Mr. Hermann Apps. As manager of the Deutsche Bank and director of IG Farben, he ran slave labor. Children were killed. People were tortured. They were undernourished. They asked him to stop this, using these small children for slave labor. They worked until they died, and he was the man who helped select the location of Auschwitz for IG Farben for their rubber plant, and he went there many times and supervised it as the head of the German bank. That's Hermann Apps. So the Brown Teton's New Germany and the Old Nazis also has a description of Hermann Apps and his role in building up Germany after the war and continuing in the powerful position that he has today, where he's right back again with the Vatican Bank. So when the Pope talks about human rights, the way he should show his sincerity in human rights is not to put Hermann Apps, the symbol of all this pain and torture, running the Vatican Bank that's in trouble already because it's dealing with hidden funds, because how do we know where it's going now if it isn't going back to the same old Nazis? And last week I mentioned the article that's coming out in the American Weekly next week. Look for it in your Sunday paper so that you won't have to write and ask me for it. It's a magazine section. Luckily, our Monterey Herald has it. And for those of you in the East around the country that don't get it, it's in over 300 newspapers on Sunday. There will be the story of Klaus Barbie. But Barbie, I mentioned several items about the article last week, how he plotted to become the next Führer and directed, worked for the CIA from 1971 to 82. But he was more than that. This article will go into more details, and it's very important because the war in Lebanon and in Beirut right now is over the valley, the Baku Valley, and the concentration of narcotics, the Jamal family and the dealings of the Falange, and getting the cocaine from down in Bolivia and Peru and processing it over there in Lebanon, and the role of the CIA in these countries of being the middleman, shipping and allowing these Nazis to trade together and then using the profits for more political right-wing death squads around the world. Now, one listener, subscriber to World Watchers, sent me the press release of this new article that's coming out that I mentioned last week, that Klaus Barbie masterminded the cocaine traffic. He was a colonel in the Bolivian secret police. He recruited a 6,000-man Nazi military group that wear the uniforms and the Heil Hitler so forth down in Bolivia. I'm sure they didn't disappear just because he's in France today. Mr. Gomez was one of his partners. Gomez has been arrested and might be sent to the United States. That's Luis, L-U-I-S, Arce Gomez, A-R-C-E, G-O-M-E-Z. Now, once Bolivia became socialist, the American government offered something like $74 million last week to stop the flow of cocaine because they don't want the profits to get in the hands of the socialists. It can be in the hands of the CIA or the Nazis. We tried to buy off, Richard Nixon tried to buy off Turkey. And the people depended on the narcotics traffic there. And when the Pope was shot, I said one of the motives could be Ajaz living in the middle of that area where all of their money was cut off by the American government. And the profit went in the hands of a few people to stop the traffic there so that the Shah of Iran could be the chief drug user and distributor coming out of the war in Southeast Asia, now the Middle East, in order to give the Shah the profits that go into Chase Manhattan Bank and William Rogers and Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger and Gerald Ford. In order to keep that going, they wanted the Turkish opium cut off so that they could control their own territory. With this Klaus Barbie, it taught them, as if they needed teaching, in the interrogation methods down in Bolivia. And you'll see the article of how in 1971, as I said before, that's when he really becomes a big shot. Now, when Richard Nixon, rather, becomes president, that is when all the drug traffic from Southeast Asia, the war in Vietnam, South America, and the Middle East begins to pour in this country. So that while he was a leading organizer of the cocaine traffic, and the CIA knew it, they began to put him on the payroll, and he worked directly with the Central Intelligence Agency while he was doing the drug running. He was given a shipping line that provided travel documents for him into the United States, where he visited on many occasions. They say four, but there's no way of knowing if there's more. And he was in Europe, and he had identification and could go all over the world. But he organized death squads, and the Fiance of Death, that terrible, dreaded squad down there. So that what you get in Klaus Barbie is a microcosm of what is going on in many, many countries in Southeast Asia, Middle East, and all over the world. And they're shipping the narcotics now down to Africa also. That's just what they need down there, is to begin the narcotic traffic there. There's not enough problems. And pouring it into the United States, into Detroit and New York and California and so forth. Well, Barbie worked for the government. They helped him escape. They lied to the French where he was. Why was he so valuable when the war was over? Did we need these narcotics? Do we need the fiancés of death? Do you need 6,000 Nazis in Bolivia saying Heil Hitler and wearing the uniforms? What did the American government need that Barbie was so precious? If you locked him up and put him in jail forever, would the world be any worse off? Why did we go to such lengths to get him out, get him set in Bolivia? And then as soon as Kennedy is killed and Johnson's out, Nixon's home free, and boy, the prophets, these people, Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, and I don't have to tell you what kind of profits were in and are in the drug market. Now, a listener from New York sent me a story about the drug traffic in the Middle East and Lebanon, and she called me to say, May, this is what you were saying at the time of the invasion a year ago, and I was talking about the narcotic traffic. It's an article by Joseph Volz, incidentally enough, V-O-L-Z. Many of you remember his name. He was for public broadcasting at the time the House Select Committee was on, and he covered up the clues and the pieces then. But he's written a good article on Nugent Hand, and now he has one, Link of the Government to Cocaine, the Beirut Connection to Cocaine. And this is an extensive article on the Jamal family and Israel and the Middle East and South America, closely dealing with South America. And what they want to do is to get the PLL cleaned out so that they have control, total control of all the narcotics in the area and let them flow. And this article says that even though we work with Jamal, we don't want to press him about this. We know that he floods narcotics into the United States. We know that they're coming into New York and Detroit, but the government doesn't want to say anything. Well, why not? Why are they so precious? We'll take a one-minute break here and be back in 1 minute. And, of course, you know at the time we take a break here, for those of you who don't have this part of the tape, elsewhere we ask for money to send to this station or if another station plays this broadcast there, but particularly on KAZU-FM.